Well, happy Easter. Easter, of course, is on the Christian calendar, two different places, whether you're Orthodox or non-Orthodox, the happiest day of the year. It is the celebration of birth, of rebirth, of life, a celebration of life's remarkable strength, and the conquest of life over death. And one can take that and understand that in all different kinds of ways, from the fundamentalistic way to the metaphorical way. What we agree on, however, is in the strength and the beauty of life. But as Rick Mastin's song, Let It Be a Dance, tells us, and as we sang earlier, without the dark, there is no light. If nothing's wrong, then nothing's right. And Easter, theologically and liturgically, depends on Good Friday. That's what essentially distinguishes Christianity on one hand from Judaism and Islam on the other hand. There really are no important distinctions in terms of moral and ethical teachings. There is very little that comes out of the first Jesus singular that anybody has an argument with. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, plead for the widow and orphan, love one another. These are not controversial. They are extraordinarily difficult, but they are not controversial. The most difficult commandment in all of scriptures is to walk humbly, but we'll work on that someday. Unitarians have as far to go on that as fundamentalists do. The walking humbly is tough. Easter depends on Good Friday, just as our joy in the season depends on the cold of winter. If we lived in one mood, in one temperature, in one constant paradise, we would lose the sense of the rhythm of life, the great joys, as well as the shivering cold and the fears. But they're all a part of what make us feel alive and know that we are alive as we go through the seasons of the sky and the seasons of our own hearts. We are a part, our souls are a part of the rhythm of nature. The Passover, Easter are spring holidays, and not at all accidentally. They are both journeys from darkness to light. The Passover, a time of slavery in Egypt, and a birth story from the darkness through the parting of the Red Sea, a birth canal, into the bright light of the desert, and a new opportunity to live, not a perfect life, but to live in freedom. The Christian metaphor is the same. It is a journey towards the light, towards the sunrise. That's the reason that the name of the sermon is, let's put the East back in Easter, because they are, in fact, related. Regular, normal Christian churches and cathedrals are oriented, word meaning East, towards the East and towards the sunrise, because that is the symbol of hope, the renewal of the day, the renewal of life, the renewal of the Spirit. Saul Invictus, the invincible sun, was a symbol of Christianity. It was a symbol in Roman mythology, in Greek mythology, and in Mithra. It is, and probably going back all the way to the Egyptian sun god, Aten-Ra. The sense that we have that with every sunrise, there is a new opportunity for life. With every springtime, there is a new opportunity, as that which was dead or seemed to be dead comes back to life. Had I not been so technologically sophisticated and bought this wonderful tiny digital camera, I wouldn't have lost the little tiny digital camera, and it would have been, I have no idea where it is, and it would have been available to me when this pot with a plant that died was sitting on our front porch all winter long, being very dead. Its leaves had turned brown. It had lost half the leaves. But then there was a magical moment where new leaves and new shoots and new life came up through, and there was green mixed in with the dead. There was life and death and renewal going on right on my front porch. And it was an extraordinary metaphor for how we lead or can lead our lives on this planet. Understanding the rhythms of the leaves must fall in order for there to be new life. Understanding that as the flowers wither and die, the seeds go to the wind and fall to the earth and are renewed again. The psalmists in the Hebrew scriptures asked about humanity, said, what are we that God should be mindful of us? We are as the grass. We grow in the morning, we flourish at noon, we wither in the afternoon and are cut down. And yet it comes back again and again as the seasons change. And as this Easter and the traditional Easter sunrise reminds us of life, of death, of rebirth, and of the joy that comes as we go on a journey towards a light that will warm us, that will illuminate us, that will inspire us, a light of hope. Not necessarily personally, because we are mortal, but a light nonetheless that puts us in a historic journey with lots of other seekers, lots of other wanderers. Good Friday. Good Friday is right at the heart of Easter, because sacrifice is right at the heart of Western religion, even if we would hide it. Judaism is born, as we'll talk about for those of you who attend the Passover Seder, Judaism is born when Abraham takes his son Isaac in the Jewish version and Ishmael in the Muslim version, rides a donkey to the place of the sacrifice, and Isaac carries the wood for his own sacrifice to the top of the hill and is bound on that wood to be sacrificed. Does that sound like a familiar story? Have you heard that somewhere else? And instead of sacrificing Isaac, a ram is sacrificed, and Judaism is born. Judaism is reborn in Egypt when the angel of death passes over the homes of the houses that are marked with the blood of the Lamb. Christianity is born on that Good Friday when, for Christians, Jesus dies for one's sins, and the blood of Agnostai, of the blood of the God's Lamb, it marks Christian salvation, and one is saved from everlasting death. Consistent stories and images of sacrifice. Which brings me briefly to Judas. There's big news. Judas has gotten himself a new press agent, and and he has a whole new career. And in America, they say there are no second acts. There are always second acts. And I'm going to be doing a class on Judas later in May, and I invite all of you to participate in that.
Is there any chance you'll have done the DNA exam?
Well, that's a whole other issue. We're dealing with, in these stories, are truths, not facts. We don't know anything except the truths of the stories, the truths of the literary approaches and the themes and the things that have been used for centuries to inform our hearts and to enrich us. The Judas story, as it's now coming out in the Gospel of Judas, which again is 200 years post facto, newer than the Gospels in their final edited edition. But the Judas story as it's coming out now is theologically accurate, which is Judas has a role to fulfill. If the Lamb doesn't die, there's no salvation. If Isaac is killed instead of a ram, there's no Judaism. The angel of death doesn't pass over the houses marked by the blood of the Lamb. There is no rebirth of freedom through the Red Sea. If Judas does not fulfill his role as a handmaiden of salvation for Christians, then there is no Christianity. Jesus does not get to die of old age. If that happened, he would only be a wisdom teacher. And there might be Jesusism, but it would be unlikely that we would remember. So Judas has his role to play theologically. And it's kind of interesting to me anyway, because the name of the religion that goes on in this building on Fridays and Saturdays is called Judaism. Not Josephism, not Mosesism, but Judaism. And it's kind of interesting because Judah, in the prequel, is the one who sells his brother Joseph. Joseph is thrown in a pit, but he is sold for silver and shekels, arises at the side of Pharaoh the king, and is the instrument of salvation. So Judah, instead of being blamed, when Jacob goes to die, he has a choice to give his legacy and his blessing to Judah, who sold Joseph, or to Joseph, who saved the tribes. Jacob, understanding that those two events were related, does a sleight of hand and moves from his left hand to his right hand and crosses them and hands the legacy to Judah. Judah and Judas play the same role as instruments of salvation. And one of the things is that we can't always know in this life, which is an incomplete information problem, what is a betrayal and what is an act of salvation. What will the end of our acts be? We can only try to deal with it within our own moral framework. Gospel of Judas says Jesus asked Judas to deliver him so that it might be accomplished, as in Isaiah 53, that the suffering servant would go as a lamb to slaughter. Judah delivers Joseph out of the pit and arising at the side of the king. Very coherent stories. The most moving story for me personally in the whole Easter narrative is Peter. Peter is one of the few jokes in the Gospels. There's not a lot of humor, certainly not a lot of puns, but I found the one pun in the Gospels, and that's when Jesus turns to Peter and says, "Peter, you are the rock upon which I will build my church." Now that's a pun. Petrus is rock and Petrus is Peter. But Peter is not a rock. Peter is a wuss, I think is the technical Hebrew term. Peter says, "I will be faithful." And Jesus says, "Forget about it. You're not going to be faithful. You are going to deny me," in one version, 2 times, and another version, 3 times. And he says, no, I'll be constant. I'll be wonderful. I'm with you. And so when Jesus is taken and Peter's wandering around and someone says, "Hey, you were with the guy over there." He goes, "Who, me? No, you're thinking of somebody else with the same name." He absolutely denies Jesus a couple of times. And he falls into a sense of despair. It becomes winter to his soul. But he climbs back, like Joseph out of the pit, like Jesus out of the grave. Peter comes back from this act of self-betrayal, betrayal of his own values, and does become a rock upon which a church is built. He comes back from his damaged and guilty position and finds springtime, finds a new greening of his life, a new purpose to his life, and he carries on the vision and turns and returns to himself. The message of the season is that winter happens. Darkness falls. We feel at times alone and betrayed and self-betraying and disappointed in our world and disappointed in our families, sometimes disappointed in our churches, disappointed in ourselves, and yet the great faith is not necessarily based on theology or magic, but the great faith is spring will come. That which was dead can become alive again in our hearts. That which has fallen to the ground can bring forth new life, green life, fecund life, as we return to life with the faith that Saul Invictus, the invincible sun, will climb again in the skies and light our world and light our family and light our souls.